Our show is supported by Be My Guest with Ina Garten, Ina's official podcast from Food Network, back for its fourth season. On every episode, Ina invites a different friend to her home in the Hamptons to talk about life, love, and career, all while cooking up an amazing meal. Join Ina as she crafts a classic cocktail with journalist Frank Bruni and discusses the ins and outs of Yorkshire pudding with actress Emily Mortimer. If you're looking for great conversations about and over good food, tune in to Be My Guest with Ina Garten. Listen to Be My Guest with Ina Garten wherever you get your podcasts. Hey, I'm Francis Lamb, and this is Splendid Table Select, our mini podcast about the stuff that makes us better cooks and eaters. Most people reach for the maple syrup only when it's pancake time, but more and more folks are finding out that it's a great way to sweeten something without refined white sugar. Beth Dooley and Meta Nielsen have a new book out called Sweet Nature. And maple syrup might be better for us and for the environment, but Beth and Meta revel in maple syrup's magical way of completely transforming a dish. Our contributor Shauna Seaver talked with them about simple ways we can all get a little bit of that magic in our kitchen. Have a listen.
Hi, Beth. Hi, Meta. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Hey.
Hey.
Now, using unrefined sugars in cooking and baking, it's become huge in the food world. I wanted to know what excites you about working with maple products as ingredients.
You know, a number of things. First of all, maple has a distinct flavor. So you can really enrich a dish, whether it's a baked food or something savory, by playing with that flavor and paying attention to it. Whereas white sugar or even some of the natural cane sugars really don't have much flavor at all. So they're so neutral that you're not really adding anything. And with maple, you're not only sweetening, but you're adding an additional flavor.
I love how many savory recipes are in the book, and I feel like those are the greatest examples to show off how you almost use maple as seasoning in addition to just being a sweetener. It's not like you're using cups of it in order to get the flavor across. You're really kind of just using it in a smart way. Tell us how you approached using the ingredients.
You know, that's exactly right. And that's what makes working with these foods so much fun, is that they really brighten a dish, much like salt does. And so you're working at both ends of the flavor spectrum, salty and sweet. And when you use them together, you don't need as much of either, because they work together to brighten flavors. And so, for instance, Meta uses maple in some of the fish recipes. They really are interesting.
Yeah, so I grew up, of course, eating herring and lox. It was very common foods in Denmark. And maple is not common in Denmark. I mean, the sugar maple is native to North America. And as a kid, we would see it every once in a while in the markets, but it was nothing that anybody knew how to use, and certainly not in cooking. So that was kind of a fun challenge for me to kind of take these traditional Danish recipes and then making them new and exciting using maple, because it really added a level of flavor that, you know, we didn't have before. And the same in some of the preserving recipes, using maple sugar, which was also a product that I hadn't really used before. And it's a very expensive product. It's much more expensive than the maple syrup, because it's really a concentrated, maple syrup. So we use very little of it, but it adds so much flavor. So very, very fun to play with.
You bring up a really interesting point that you have some of those recipes that you grew up with in Denmark, but you also go global with flavors and dishes in this book and adapt some recipes from different countries that might not typically use maple. Tell us about discovering some of those recipes and what you decided to put in the book.
You know, one of the approaches we take is we look to the flavor of the maple or the honey or whatever food we were working with to see how that might work with some of our favorite dishes, for instance, whether they were South American or, in Meta's case, Danish. And then look to see what kind of seasonings that came from that region and how we might replicate those flavors using what was local, because our focus has always been on local. And that, you know, we're seeing that happen in cuisines all over the world, where people are looking at what grows best in their area and then using them in combination with other flavors from around the world. So to give you an example, we use maple with the duck confit and pepper. It somehow works with the fat in that recipe to make it even more luscious than it already is. And in some cases, maple replaces agave, for instance, which is a, it has a distinct flavor, but it's not unlike maple. So in some of the Mexican dishes, we've used a little bit of maple to replace that same flavor. So it was more about paying attention to the entire dish, but then seeing how maple might fit in.
And something a lot of people may not realize is that there are different grades of maple syrup that all have their own unique profiles, almost kind of like tasting wine. You can pick out different notes, or it can be sweet, or it can be bitter. Can you run through those grades for us and how we can get the most out of each of them?
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for mentioning that, because it is very much like wine. And that's what we're seeing happen with food systems all over the planet, is that, again, people are looking at what flavors are distinct to that region. And certainly, because we have so much maple syrup here, that's really true for us. The best way to tell about the flavor of maple syrup is to look for the color. They're all grade A now, and so golden is the mildest, and that's followed by amber, and that's followed by dark, and that's followed by very dark. And the darker the syrup, the more distinctly maple it will taste. And I love that super, super dark maple syrup, because it's almost even a little more viscous than the lighter maple syrup. And it's very rich tasting. So you don't, again, you don't need a lot of it, but you get a lot of punch by using that if you want that distinct maple flavor.
And actually, I'm realizing I kind of misspoke, because there used to be different grades. There was grade A, there was grade B. B being the much more, the darker, more complex of the two syrups. Now they're all sort of called grade A, but they're actually described by flavor and color, correct? So the grades are actually have kind of fallen by the wayside. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And they did that because by grading them A, B, C, you know, it indicated that maybe they'd be of a lesser quality, when in fact they're not. I actually prefer the darker syrups because they, again, because they have more flavor.
They really do. And there seem to be so many maple products popping up all over the place, whether it's maple syrup or maple sugars. What is it about maple that lends itself to this kind of small batch production and this sort of spirit of making it in this special way?
You know, it's really interesting. There are, of course, large maple operations that do this commercially, and the commercial manufacturers actually pipe the maple in from trees, and then they process it in big stainless steel evaporators. But in our case, we've gone up to friends' cabins in the woods, where we've actually tapped the trees the old-fashioned way with a spiel and a bucket, and then lug the buckets down to a big vat over a roaring wooden fire and stirred that maple syrup all night long as it reduces down. It takes a long time to make maple syrup, and it's precious because it is coming from trees, and there's no predicting how much syrup you're going to get every year. We've had some great years, and we've had some really slim years, and so that is also reflected in the price.
So it takes about 40 gallons of sap to make 1 gallon of syrup. So that is a lot of water. When the sap comes out of the tree, it looks like water. It's completely clear, and there's no sweetness to it. But as you start, you know, cooking it down, evaporating it, that's when you can start getting the flavor, and we will start making tea out of the slightly sweet water. But there's also a lot of minerals, because it's being pulled up deep from the ground early in the spring, and that makes it a little bit different. And I'm, you know, you can't really taste it, but I'd like to think that it's at least better for us. But also by cooking it open fire, you get kind of a smoky flavor to it. So it's incredibly time consuming to make, but it is so amazing. And syrup should cost like, you know, $100 a gallon because it is so much work. Just use a little of it and buy a good product. I think that's the best advice.
There is such a range of maple products out there right now. So for those of us who want to start using it more regularly in our cooking or our baking, what's the most practical thing to be stocking in our pantries? And give us some general tips for using it.
Well, the first thing is just make sure once you've opened it that you keep it in the refrigerator, because it does tend to get a little moldy on top. That's not dangerous. You can always just scrape mold off and then boil the syrup, and it'll be fine again. But do store it in the refrigerator. I like just having several grades of maple syrup in my fridge, because it's like having maybe different kinds of vinegar in your refrigerator or different types of olive oil. I may use that very dark, lovely syrup just to season something, use very, very little of it. It's wonderful actually mixed with balsamic vinegar. If you find that that balsamic is not strong enough or rich enough tasting, you can add a little bit of maple syrup to it. It will brighten the flavor of that balsamic. It's a wonderful way to glaze chicken breasts, for instance. But I don't use very much of it because the flavor is very, very strong. And then for a light syrup, that's a wonderful alternative, say, to corn syrup, for instance, if you're making a pie.
And then rediscovered the maple vinegar, which has been a really fun product. Native Americans made a product called sour sap at the end of the season, where they took the sap and they fermented it, and it turned it kind of into a vinegar-like product. It's not easy to find. We found it online, and we are hoping that more producers will start making it locally because it's really fun. It's kind of tastes like an cider vinegar, and we tell people to substitute with that if you can't find it. So it's fun to use in dressings and in other places where you just need like a tablespoon of something to kind of change the flavor.
I actually like it better than cider vinegar. It's not as sharp as cider vinegar. It's a little rounder tasting, a little milder.
Oh, that's fun. Lots of fun new ingredients to shop for. Thank you so much, you two.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was contributor Shauna Seaver with Beth Dooley, a James Beard Award-winning author, and Meta Nielsen, a photographer and talented master gardener. They are the authors of the recently published Sweet Nature, a cook's guide to using honey and maple syrup. For more information and to check out the recipes they shared with us, head to splendidtable.org. That's it for today. We hope you loved what you heard. If you did, please take a moment and leave us a review. Until next time, thanks for listening, and I'm Francis Lamb.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.